12. When your hands become claws. On his way down, Modo had the presence of mind to take a deep breath. He hit the water with a huge splash and plummeted like a cannonball deeper and deeper into the shocking cold, then kicked and kicked his way upward. When he finally broke the surface, he sucked in a breath, then treaded water. His eyes stung from the salt water. He blinked until his vision cleared. Then, as he was lifted by a cresting wave, he saw that the Hugo had already drifted hundreds of yards away. He could make out Octavia and the shorter figure of the captain beside her, both shouting and gesturing. Then Modo fell with the wave, and it seemed forever before he rose high enough to spot the Hugo again. Octavia was so far away, he couldn't imagine her being able to see him. Minutes later, he could still hear shouting and the rumble of the engine, but could no longer see the ship. The next thing he saw was a funnel of smoke on the horizon.
"Don't leave me! Don't!"
he shrieked, swallowing a mouthful of seawater. He hacked for a minute, trying to keep his chin above the surface until his throat was cleared. Then his world fell silent. Good Lord, he was alone now. Even the smoke had vanished. Over his right shoulder there was a splash. Sharks? Would they go for his legs? Oh, no! Oh, no! He kicked hard and swam until his limbs ached and his lungs wheezed. Keep your thoughts clear. Tharpa had told him that 1,000 times over the years. Modo paused to gather his wits. He treaded water in a circle, scanning every inch of its surface. No fins. Therefore, he deduced, it was unlikely there were any sharks. Octavia's voice echoed in his head, "Look out, Scotland Yard!" Unbelievably, for an instant, he smiled. Suddenly he was aware of the drag of his clothing, so he struggled out of his jacket and kicked off his shoes. Think, Modo. What next? The ship wouldn't come back, and in any case he would be very hard to spot. There would be no rescue, unless they were able to send another ship in the next hour, and then, by some miracle, the crew would have to pick him out in the vast rolling waves. Would it be soon enough? He was shivering so hard that his teeth clacked together. Just keep moving. Keep yourself warm. Since Modo's last assignment, Thorpe had taught him how to swim properly at Forest Hill baths, but the ocean was much colder than the plunge pools at the spa. He had read so many stories about men being stranded at sea, then captured by pirates. But pirates liked islands. Under Mrs. Finchley's tutelage, he had memorized the map of the world, and he knew there were no islands in the area. Ergo, no pirates. Maybe Mr. Socrates would save him. Yes, yes, with a balloon. He'd float down out of the sky, with Tharpa, who would lower a rope and lift him out of the water. Madness. He shook his head to dispel the daydream. Stay calm. Stay calm. Think. Think! It was after 9 in the morning, which meant the sun was in the east. If he swam north, he'd be heading in the direction of Iceland, but it was miles and miles from here, and no one could swim that far in this frigid November water. Unless I change my shape into that of a dolphin. More madness. He nearly slapped himself. He could think more clearly if it weren't so cold. He didn't understand why he hadn't already frozen to death. Perhaps it is my odd, ugly body. This thought made him chuckle. It might be that some quality of his adaptive transformation made his body less likely to freeze. He was growing colder and colder. His hands were as gnarled as claws. He couldn't straighten them. Though he was exhausted, his features remained in the form of the night, as though the cold had frozen him that way. Wouldn't that be something, to die with this face, forever handsome? He thought he heard another voice. Or was it the onset of real madness? In the next few minutes his legs cramped, each sharp pain the only feeling in his universe. At least that meant he was alive. Within a half hour his feet had arched and twisted into throbbing hooks. Even his toes were crossing, frozen in place. Each breath became harder. "Say goodbye, Modo," he thought. goodbye to Mr. Socrates, the enigma of a man who had rescued him from a travelling sideshow and raised him as a son. Well, not a son, but as close as one could be.
Mr. Socrates, you struggled so hard to teach me, and I am failing you now, sir.
Then Tharpa. Young Saab, he always called Modo. Young master. Had there ever been a man as strong, quick, and light on his feet as dear Tharpa?
Mrs. Finchley. She had raised him like a mother. Just one more, Cookie. One more.
He could see a cookie jar floating on a wave just out of reach. He splashed toward it, but the jar vanished. And Tavia, who had such perfect eyes. It was as though she were there. He wished he had remarked on her hair, told her that it looked fine that day, that she was dazzling. A hissing cut through the air, a fountain of water spouted some 100 feet away, and soon he felt himself lifted slowly from the water, higher, higher, as though to heaven. His knees cramped again and bent. There was something solid underneath him. A large, dark blue whale was surfacing. It took all his strength to cling to it. Another column of water shot skyward. His mind wandered to Jonah, then to Moby Dick and Captain Ahab's need for revenge. Finally, he remembered. This was the metal-sparred whale Mr. Socrates had spoken of. From his prone position, Modo couldn't see much of it, just the many bumps along its back. Barnacles. His fingers were fused together by the freezing water. A cramp ran alongside his spine, and he cried out in pain. The whale was like a block of dark blue ice that vibrated. A shiver? The swishing of its tail? He'd heard of shipwrecked men who'd swum to an island, only to discover when they lit a fire that the island was actually a whale that had been sleeping there for years. Could that be true? His eyes were half frozen shut. The glinting of the dull sun made him blink. Only one eye was working now. He blinked again. His vision cleared momentarily, and he saw that they weren't barnacles on the side of the whale after all, but glittering gold flecks across the dark blue skin. He touched one with numb fingers. A nut. It was a brass nut, fastening a steel plate. The sight shocked him, gave him a spurt of energy. He spotted a small rail a few feet in front of him. A rounded section protruded from the metal. He crawled to the rail and hung on. Then he saw the circular door at the top of the protrusion. He worked his claw fingers into the latch. It wouldn't turn. Locked. He summoned up his last spark of strength and pulled. He half expected his fingers to break and fly off. His every muscle was knotting up, but he heard the metal begin to grind. Then came a snap, and he pried the lid open. Inside was a ladder. A light. Safety. Something struck the side of his skull hard. As he tried to raise a hand to protect himself, he was hit again. He grabbed at the ladder, but his stiff hands couldn't catch the rung, and he fell head first down the hole.